Yuan carries out a new space launch, successfully putting three research satellites into orbit. Russian President Vladimir Putin warns his U.S. counterpart over new Western sanctions against Moscow, describing the move as a big mistake. And Sudanese security forces shoot and kill four people during a new round of anti-coup protests in the country. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. Now our top story, Iran has successfully sent three research payloads into space using a domestically produced satellite launch rocket. Iranian Defense Ministry says the Seymour satellite carrier rocket launcher the research devices to an altitude of 470 kilometers. It also says objectives of the launch were fulfilled. According to the ministry, the development of the Seymour satellite launch rocket, as well as the Imam Khomeini Space Center, have been key projects in Iran's space industry. The country has already sent other satellites into space using two domestically made carriers dubbed Safir and Qasid. Political commentator Keaton Mansfield says Iran's space exploration program shows Western sanctions have not been able to hamper its progress.
It's very, very unfortunate, and it's detestable that the United States, that NATO, has put so many sanctions on Iran and other countries, Cuba and Venezuela, and of course the Soviet Union. Was around the Soviet Union as well to try to hold back any sort of human development, of further scientific exploration. But despite this, look, Iran has pushed forward. It has endured this, and now we have launched. We've got three research technology within space, outside of the Earth's atmosphere. This is the kind of stuff that you want to be seeing out of countries. This is how you know that a country is focused on progress and development and science. I mean, despite you see it all the time in Western outlets and corporate outlets that Iran is some sort of backward medieval state that's just, you know, rolling plains of sand and desert. That's obviously not true. I mean, a country that's pushing and moving forward with space exploration is a country that is very much interested and devoted to scientific development. In my eyes, it calls back to the golden age of Islam, of pioneering mathematics and science and astronomy. This is kind of the rebirth, the revitalization that, you know, the Middle Eastern world, Eurasia, has historically been known for. So it's an exceptional thing to see.
Iran's lead delegate to the Vienna talks says there has been relatively good progress in negotiations aimed at restoring the 2015 deal or the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Ali Baghdadi Kani says talks have been focused on the removal of U.S. sanctions. From Vienna, Homolezgi reports.
Iran's lead delegate to the Vienna talks, Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Baghdadi Kani, says there's been relatively good progress over the past few days in the negotiations aimed at restoring the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA.
The main focus of the negotiations was sanctions removal. We had several meetings with the EU coordinator and the three European signatories, both on verification and guarantees.
Iran says it will go back to its nuclear commitments only after it verifies the full removal of US sanctions. Tehran has also demanded guarantees that the U.S. will not withdraw from the JCPOA again or impose sanctions that violate the deal. A European source close to the negotiations says all participants agree that verification and assurances have to be reflected in the final document, but that there are still questions on how that is possible. So are these issues going to create major obstacles in the way of a final agreement?
Yes, it's a major problem because these European diplomats know quite well how verification can take place. It's not something strange. If the Iranians cannot use the banking system because behind the scenes the Americans are threatening banks, then that's a violation of the JCPOA.
Russia's lead delegate Mikhail Olyanov said he believed an agreement could be achieved in the first half of February, adding that although the discussions were difficult, there was steady progress.
General impression, business-like atmosphere, positive trends recognized by everybody, by all participants. We need to be patient, persistent in our efforts, and we will overcome all the problems.
Informal consultations are set to continue within the framework of the Vienna talks. The eighth round will resume after a three-day break for the New Year holidays on Monday. Homolezki, Vienna.
Iranians have gathered in the city of Shahrareh to commemorate the 2nd March of Demand anniversary of top Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in 2020 in an American drone strike in Iraq. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Gathering in Iran's town of Shahrareh is a tribute to a man who's known as the father of national security in Iran, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. A few days ahead of the second anniversary of his assassination, Iranian people and senior officials gathered to commemorate him and mourn his loss.
General Soleimani is no longer with us, but his legacy will continue across the generations to come. His assassination is a huge miscalculation on the part of the U.S. He was an influential axis in the region, and his assassination led to the humiliating ouster of American troops from Iraq and then Afghanistan.
General Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was killed in 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump.
General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against terrorism in our region. So by assassinating him, the U.S. sought to dispose of him to allow the terrorists to roam freely in the region to serve the interests of the American government.
By assassinating General Soleimani, the U.S. thought in vain that it will stop his anti-terror activities. But in fact, Soleimani is still alive in the hearts of millions of Iranians who will continue his path stronger than ever.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that resulted in the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. His efforts made him known as the nemesis of the terrorists in the region. In 2020, millions of people in Iraq and Iran took part in his funeral ceremony to pay tribute to him and bid him farewell.
2 years into the incident, Iranians still mourn the loss of General Soleimani. They say they will not forget his endeavors in the fight against terrorism, something which earned him the title of a national hero and the guarantor of regional security. Yusuf Jalali from the town of Rai.
In another step in line with Persian Gulf Arab states' major policy shift towards Syria, Bahrain has now reportedly appointed its first ambassador to Damascus in over a decade, and the appointment is part of a diplomatic shift in West Asia as a growing number of Arab countries are seeking to revive ties with Syria. Last month, the UAE sent its foreign minister to Damascus, where he met the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad. Abu Dhabi, which reopened its embassy in Damascus in 2018, has called for Syria to be readmitted to the Arab League. The United Arab Emirates was one of several regional states which backed militants fighting to overthrow the Assad government. However, Syria's military achievements against the militants prompted a change of policy in hostile capitals. Political commentator Jim Kavanaugh says Arabs' warming of ties with Syria is a good sign. However, he says the real issue is the occupation of Syria by the U.S. and Turkey.
They've come to a conclusion, I think, that they're not going to dislodge Assad from power. They're not going to have overt regime change of the government in Syria. and they're willing to do business with them again. And that's a good thing. It demonstrates the Syrians stood up to this, and they held back what the Americans and the Israelis and the Gulf states thought was going to be an unstoppable tsunami of jihadi violence, but they stood up to it. But I do want to be, you know, I welcome these developments, but we have to be, you know, I'm not celebrating yet. I mean, Washington is not going to leave, you know, they're engaged in, as I said, first of all, occupation of Syrian material resources, the oil, the grain fields, and preventing, you know, determined to prevent Syrian reconstruction. And they're not going to stop doing that because the UAE and Bahrain have diplomatic relations. And if the UAE and Bahrain and the Arab League want to start doing something that's serious, it's not just opening an embassy, but calling on the United States to get out and to stop preventing Syrian reconstruction, calling on Turkey to get out and stop, you know, trying to divide, giving Syria back its territorial integrity.
Russia warns the U.S. that any further sanctions against Moscow will threaten bilateral ties. Now, speaking on the phone, Russian President Vladimir Putin tells his American counterpart, Joe Biden, that introducing more bans will be a colossal mistake. Biden, for his part, warns Russia of a decisive response in case Moscow invades Ukraine. 50-minute-long call is the second time the two leaders spoke directly to one another in just over 3 weeks. The West accuses Moscow of planning that is an invasion of Ukraine, something Moscow denies, arguing its military buildup along its border is a means of protection against NATO's eastward expansion. Officials from the two countries will hold security talks over the issue in January. In Sudan, tens of thousands of anti-coup protesters have braved a security lockdown, taking to the streets across the country. Security forces clashed with the protesters, fatally shooting at least four of them. Medics say at least three protesters were killed in the city of Omdurman. Security forces also fired tear gas and stun grenades to disperse protesters in the capital Khartoum and the city of Bahri. Protesters are calling for full civilian rule without any military involvement. They chanted slogans against military chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who led the coup on October 25th. Burhan's forces detained the Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and his cabinet for weeks, but later reinstated the premier. Anti-coup protests, though, have nevertheless continued. Nearly 50 people have been killed by security forces since the military's takeover. The COVID pandemic wreaks havoc across Europe amid a rapid surge in cases fueled by the spread of the Omicron variant. The UK reported nearly 200,000 new daily infections, 189,000 to be exact, an all-time high since the start of the pandemic. It also registered 332 deaths in the past day. Italy marked a fresh daily record in cases as well, logging nearly 127,000 infections. In France, new cases surpassed the 200,000 mark, another record for a second straight day. Meanwhile, the number of cases in Germany still remains high, with authorities reporting more than 109,000 new infections. And now coronavirus infections are breaking records across Western Europe, but deaths and hospitalizations are a fraction of the previous waves. Apparent dual nature of the Omicron variant is inspiring fear in some and optimism in others. Rami Mazahiri explains why out of Paris.
France has broken the European record for corona infections, and nations across Western Europe are also reaching new daily highs as the pandemic has entered a new but seemingly less deadly phase.
The coronavirus right now is exploding right now in France. It's very scary to see. I saw over 200,000 infections in France in one day. So I'm nervous. I'm trying to get back to the United States right now, and I'm waiting for a COVID test right now. I'm very nervous. I want to make sure that it's negative so I'm able to get back home.
France currently has over 4 million active cases of corona, but 99.9% of them are classified as mild. Daily deaths are half of what they were a year ago, while shorter quarantines are being approved. cases are soaring in part because many more people are getting tested prior to holiday gatherings, but France's hospital admissions are just a third of previous peaks. It appears increasingly certain that the new Omicron variant may spread like wildfire, but that it is significantly less lethal, causing many to have a cautious sense of relief.
Corona is mainly just a bad flu. It's only a serious risk for certain types of people. But for the overwhelming majority of people, if you get vaccinated, if you quarantine when you have symptoms, if you use common sense to protect yourself and others, then all will be fine.
The high transmission rate of Omicron does have some taking scientifically questionable steps not seen since the early days of the pandemic. Paris has just made face masks mandatory in all public places, even outdoors. Some nations, which aren't seeing an increase in cases, have banned public holiday festivities anyway. France, Italy, and other countries are debating making their health passes even more restrictive, which many say is an abuse of personal freedom.
France has long been considered the most vaccine-skeptical nation in the world, but measures which amount to either get vaccinated or live in social isolation have coerced 80% of the country into getting vaccinated.
One fact appears vital. In France, the unvaccinated are far more likely to be in intensive care than those who have chosen to be inoculated. What many are hoping for in 2022 is that Omicron truly does herald the end of the lethal phase of Corona 19, which would render moot the controversies and uncertainties over how to best handle the long-running pandemic. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
General Soleimani's School of Resistance and Insight. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. The 9th of the Iranian month of Dey, 1388, corresponding with December 29th, 2009, was the day of insight, recognition of enemy and obedience of the leader.
Martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was one of the true students of the school of Velayat, or God-given authority, which is manifested in the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He was a brave and prudent commander who looked at different issues very deeply. 29th of December 2009 has correctly been called the Day of Insight. The epic presence of the Iranian people in the scene on this day showed that they protect the Islamic system and the leadership of the Islamic Revolution with their blood. The Holy Book of Muslims, the Noble Quran, calls on the faithful to be insightful and act according to their intellect and knowledge. God, after relating the story of Prophet Joseph as an admonition, tells Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, say, "This is my way. I summon to Allah with insight. I am he who follows me. Immaculate is Allah, and I am not one of the polytheists." Ayatollah Khamenei said in his sermon on Friday, January 17, 2020, "We should look at our dear general as a school, a way and an admonishing school." The leader in his speech on the day of Mab'ath, that is the start of Prophet Muhammad's divine mission as an apostle, in the next year said, "Two important elements are necessary in confrontation with enemies, which I have always recommended and recommended again. Two features are necessary for each and every one of the people. One is insight and the other is patience and steadfastness. If there were these two elements, the enemy will not be able to do anything, will not be able to harm at all, and will not succeed at all in confronting and countering the Islamic system." Insight was one of the outstanding characteristics of Martyr Soleimani. His insight had its roots in his deep belief and high level of God-awareness. His decisions proved his real trust in God. He would always fulfill his duty without an iota of consideration or fear of others. God says in Ayah 28 of Surah Hadid, "O you who have faith, be wary of Allah and have faith in his apostle. He will grant you a double share of his mercy and give you a light to walk by and forgive you, and Allah is all forgiving, all merciful." Great Commander Martyr Soleimani's insight and recognition of the enemy without doubt stemmed from his profound look and absolute obedience to the leader. Definitely, recognition of the enemy is one of the most pivotal issues for a nation. Many of the past nations were caught in the traps of enemies due to negligence of the enemy and lack of awareness in various political and social issues. Imam Ali, the commander of the faithful and the first infallible successor of the Prophet of Islam, said that whoever is asleep against the enemy's surprise tricks will awaken him. The reason for the U.S.'s enmity against Martyr Soleimani was his deep recognition of the enemy and his exemplary steadfastness against America, the Zionist regime, and their stooges in the region. The Secretary General of the Lebanese anti-terrorist movement, Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, said on the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, "Wherever the Americans go in the region, they see Haj Qasem Soleimani in front of them. When they go to Syria, they see Haj Qasem. In Iraq, Lebanon, Yemen, Afghanistan, and everywhere related to the axis of resistance, they see Haj Qasem Soleimani in front of them. Israel, too, considers Qasem Soleimani as the most dangerous man in front of itself." Dear listeners, the way to insight is the light of Velayat. Martyr Soleimani's entire being was intermingled with Velayat, and he spent his whole life in obeying the leader, once Imam Khomeini and then his successor Ayatollah Khamenei. He would always make decisions on the basis of the guidelines of the leader. He writes in his testament, "Protect the principles. The principles mean Velayat Faqih, the leader, especially this sage, learned in religion, jurisprudence, Irfan, cognizance of God. Consider dear Khamenei as your soul. Take his respect as sanctities. My brothers and sisters, the Islamic world is always in need of leadership. A leadership connected with and appointed religiously and jurisprudentially by an infallible. You know it well that the purest clergy who shook the world and revived Islam, namely our great and pure Khomeini, set up Velayat Faqih as the salvaging recipe for this ummah. Do not leave Velayat to save Islam." Martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was the symbol of a struggle against the global arrogance and the Zionist regime. His struggle had no borders, as he had been trained at the school of Imam Khomeini and Ayatollah Khamenei. His presence in the scenes of combat against the US and his puppet, Daesh, thwarted all investments and schemes against the Islamic Ummah. He breathed the spirit of self-belief in Muslim combatants. Qasem Soleimani was an unmatched commander who founded the Way of Resistance. 2 years into his martyrdom, thousands of Soleimanis have been born from his pure blood to be the perpetual nightmare for the enemies.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. We are here with the program The Muslim Lady. I'm Farman Ali Masumi, and with me in the studio
Razia tul Najafi, Alhamdulillah. Again, Allah has given us this great opportunity. I'm so glad and thankful to Allah.
Alhamdulillah. So we were discussing the very interesting and important topic about female, our Muslim lady. So in our previous episode, we talked about the Imam Khomeini's viewpoint about Muslim lady. So today we are also continuing the same topic.
Okay, before our listeners, inshallah, they will stay with us. And I really want them to stay with us. Therefore, I'm emphasizing a lot that this topic is not an ordinary topic. This is very important. You know why? Because, inshallah, we are going to recite one Surah Fatiha definitely and few salawat for soul of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, because he has given us so many rights back from this beautiful Islamic rights from this cruel world, because they have just stolen out our status and our rights.
Because of him, we are keeping our heads high in front of the Western world,
No doubt, indeed.
And in front of the Muslim societies, especially, you know, in the Middle East, in the other...
Exactly. Salutes to him,
definitely. So we are talking about the importance of a mother's role in the viewpoint of Imam Khomeini, Rizwanullah Ta'ala Alayhi. You know, although Imam Khomeini has encouraged women to play a role in the society, in politics, in all aspects of life, but he has stressed and emphasized more about the role of a mother. You know, he says when a mother is, you know, practicing real Islam and he is following the rules of Islam, definitely she will bring very good children, which means we will have a very good society. So in one of the quotations, he says, the lapse of a mother is the biggest school for a child. You know, this means that our children can learn the basic and the most important things of their life from the laps of their mother. It means our mother should, you know, be a very good practicing Muslim lady. The initial institution and school of all the children is the laps of their mother. Like we learn so many things from school, you know, the all important things which play a very vital and important role in our life, we learn from the school. So Imam Khomeini says, really the Islam's idea that all the children, they have the basic and important institute in the form of a mother. So if they have a very good and healthy environment in their initial and in their first school, definitely it will play a very big and vital role in their life, in their society. Dear listeners, we will take a very short break. Inshallah, we'll come back soon.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are talking about the role of women in the viewpoint of Imam Khomeini, Ridwanullah Ta'ala Ali.
I love this quotation of Imam Khomeini that he says, oh mothers, you have to achieve and you have to learn all the virtues, all the good deeds. You know, you have to be the center of khair, faza'il. Why? Because if you are the center of good deeds, automatically you are just spreading out, you are just conveying that good qualities and good habits and goodness to your children. That means to the next generations. For example, if a mother knows very good any skill, maybe she's so good in some languages and whatever skill
skills she has, easily she can transform that skills to the children. The same way spiritual, you know, qualities and attributes, whatever
definitely
she's achieving.
If she has a good akhlaq, she's a practicing Muslima, she recites the Holy Quran, she prays the namaz on time. So by seeing her following the real rules of Islam, the children themselves, they adopt these qualities in themselves. Yeah. So Imam Khomeini says a teacher and even a father can't teach them these things as a practicing good mother can teach them, because mother teaches them by practicing. She does not teach them verbally. You know, these babies, they are very intelligent. They can observe all the things which a mother does in there, you know.
Absolutely.
Because 24 hours they are attached with her. They witness her, whatever she does, whatever she eats, whatever she watches, and whatever she recites. All these things they witness. So by witnessing, although they are small, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old childs, but instinctively they observe, which helps them in their future.
No doubt. Yeah, beautiful.
So that's why we have a lot of stories that of the mothers who used to do wuzu to feed their children.
Yeah.
And they would take care of all the wajibat and muharramat. So they had a very, you know, beautiful family and very good and pious children. Like, you know, we have great Allama Majlisi and Sheikh Mufid, Sheikh Tusi, all these great scholars. If we look at their lives, this we would definitely get to know that their mothers were very pious ladies.
No doubt, no doubt. And therefore, you know, whenever I'm just reading and listening to Imam Khomeini, I remember so many sayings of Ma'sumin alayhi salam. For example, he says, "You, O mothers, you should become a center and hub and the root of goodness, mabda'i khairat." Yeah, if you are khair, you are the manifestation of goodness, so goodness will gush out from you.
Wow.
The same way, if you are full of evil, so the evil will come out from you. You are that center. So I remember the saying of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, "Aksarul khayri fi nisa." You know, like the center of goodness can be a woman. Allah has created her the way she can do wonders. She can impact generation after generations. But unfortunately, you know, she doesn't know her value. She said, "Nothing. I'm just a mother. I'm just a housewife. I don't have any role. Allah is not giving me so much importance. They are not appreciating me. You know, who am I? Look at this man. You know, they are earning a lot. They are working a lot. Earning is not a quality.
This
you know?
Is not the freedom, you know."
Exactly. I don't know. Sometimes she wants to maybe, you know, suppress herself. She said, "No, I want to be Muslim. Why Islam is giving me so much respect? Because nothing is necessary on her shoulders. Like, nothing is wajib, you know, incumbent on her to earn, to cook, to clean. Nothing. You know, she can choose. She has choice. She said, I like to work." That is beauty of Islam, which Imam Khomeini has brought back. So she's not appreciating it. I don't know why. Yeah, this is something really strange.
Definitely, you know, this is like our great ulama say, this is like a big factory of creation of human, you know. Now nowadays, you know, our people would like to get a very good job in a very modern factory or in a very modern institute, and they would earn so much money. This is their dream, yeah?
Yeah.
When we look at the role of a mother, we can say, like Imam Khomeini also says, she is the head of a very beautiful and vast and modern factory or institute. So no post is higher than her post. So she is definitely working as a very, very high, you know, earning mother.
Yeah.
In this aspect of life, if we think, she is not just a jobless or a housewife or these terminologies nowadays they use for women, which is totally wrong. She has a very, very big responsibility. And definitely that responsibility no any other human can play or can accept that responsibility other than her.
No doubt, yeah, indeed, I totally agree with you. And, you know, this is the point where Imam Khomeini is just, you know, keeping us aware of our status and our beautiful, you know, that, again, respect which Allah has given to us. And I love to say this very, very famous saying that, you know, if you want to destroy a nation, you start from the family. If you destroy the family structure, automatically you can rule, you can attack on that society and country. So here, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, he's keep emphasizing a lot. You know, I remember I was so young and I used to go to listen to him sometimes. And that time I couldn't, you know, understand. I said, why he's stressing a lot about mothers, you know, the role and the very powerful impact of this amazing factory which can make a good human, yeah, produce a good human being. So I couldn't understand that time. But later on, you know, you can know that by experiences that, Ya Allah, look at his wisdom, you know. So he is the biggest protector of our rights, no doubt about it. And then the way he's balancing between the role of women as a mother and the same mother is very active in the society. So inshallah, in our next episode, we are going to talk about the role of women in politics, you know, because Imam Khomeini is not just talking about it. Practically, he's giving all the rights. So that would be so interesting.
So let me end.
Time is over. Yeah.
Let me end today's program with this, that when the king said to Imam Khomeini that, why you want to, where is your army? You want to fight a kingdom, a king with lots of armies. So where is your army? So that time it is very famous that Imam Khomeini said, my army is in the wombs of mothers, in the lips of mothers.
Subhanallah.
He had
amazing.
That much in, you know, trust in the you know, Muslim, you know.
And foresighting, you know, he was looking for the future.
He was sure.
Amazing.
Then, yeah, definitely. Then it happened. Now we are witnessing the result of this beautiful
Indeed.
Thinking.
Exactly.
So I hope our listeners are enjoying this beautiful discussion. Inshallah, we will continue in our next episode. Until then, fi amanillah.
Fi amanillah. Inshallah, we are going to meet soon.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Former U.S. prosecutors say if the 6th of January panel finds new evidence about former President Donald Trump's role interfering with Congress's job to certify Joe Biden's election, that could help buttress a potential case by the Department of Justice. We now present you an article written by Peter Shaw. The piece is titled, Legal experts say Trump could face charges for trying to obstruct certification of election. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Former prosecutors and other experts say expectation is growing that former U.S. President Donald Trump might face charges for trying to obstruct Congress from certifying Joe Biden's election this year as a House panel collects more evidence into the 6th of January attack on the Capitol. Speculation about possible charges against the former U.S. President Donald Trump has been heightened by a recent rhetorical bombshell from Republican Representative and 6th of January panel Vice Chair Liz Cheney, suggesting the House panel is looking at whether Trump broke a law that bars obstruction of official proceedings. Former prosecutors say if the panel finds new evidence about Trump's role interfering with Congress's job to certify Joe Biden's election, that could help buttress a potential case by the Department of Justice. Department of Justice veterans say in varying ways Liz Cheney's comments have been echoed by two other members of the House Select Committee, Republican Adam Kinzinger and Democrat Jamie Raskin, spurring talks of how an obstruction statute could apply to Trump, which would entail the panel making a criminal referral of evidence for the Justice Department to investigate. Former Justice Department officials say Liz Cheney's remarks raising the specter of criminal charges against Donald Trump came twice earlier this month at hearings of the committee. Experts believe the charges could be well-founded given Donald Trump's actions on 6th of January, including incendiary remarks to a rally just before the Capitol attack and failure to act for hours to stop the rioting. Former Department of Justice Inspector General and former prosecutor Michael Bromwich, in a statement to The Guardian, said, "Based on what is already in the public domain, there's powerful evidence that numerous people in and out of government attempted to obstruct, and did obstruct, at least for a while, an official proceeding, that is, the certification of the presidential election." Michael Bromwich added, "That is a crime." Former prosecutors say although a House panel referral of obstruction by Donald Trump would not force the Department of Justice to open a criminal case against him, it could help provide more evidence for one and build pressure on the Justice Department to move forward. Attorney General Merrick Garland has declined to say so far whether his department may be investigating Donald Trump and his top allies already for their roles in the Capitol assault. The panel has amassed significant evidence, including more than 30,000 records and interviews with more than 300 people, among whom were some key White House staff. The evidence against Donald Trump himself could include his actions at the Stop the Steal rally not far from the White House, where he urged backers to march to the Capitol and fight like hell, or you're not going to have a country anymore. Donald Trump then resisted multiple pleas for hours from Republicans and others to urge his violent supporters to stop the attack on the Capitol. Recent ruling by Trump-appointed district court judges have supported using the obstruction statute, which federal prosecutors have cited in about 200 cases involving rioters charged by the Department of Justice for their roles in the Capitol assault that injured about 140 police officers and left 5 people dead. Still, experts note that the House panel's mission has been to assemble a comprehensive report of what took place on 6th of January and work on legislation to avoid such assaults on democracy. They caution that any criminal referral to Department of Justice documenting Trump's obstruction of Congress will take time and more evidence to help bolster a Department of Justice investigation. Some Department of Justice veterans say that any referral to Department of Justice by the House panel for a criminal case against Donald Trump and perhaps top allies such as former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, whom the House recently cited for criminal contempt for refusing to be deposed, might also include Trump's aggressive pressuring of federal and state officials before 6th of January to block Joe Biden's election win with baseless charges of fraud. Bromwich stressed that evidence is steadily accumulating that would prove obstruction beyond a reasonable doubt. The ultimate question is who the defendants would be in such an obstruction case. Evidence is growing that, as a matter of law and fact, that could include Donald Trump, Mark Meadows, and other members of Trump's inner circle. Liz Cheney teed up the issue about Trump's potential culpability first at a House panel hearing recently, when she urged that Mark Meadows be held in contempt for refusing to be deposed, and then hit Donald Trump with a rhetorical bombshell. Liz Cheney said, "We know hours passed with no action by the President to defend the Congress and the United States from an assault while we were counting electoral votes. Did Donald Trump, through action or inaction, corruptly seek to obstruct or impede Congress's official proceeding to count electoral votes?" Liz Cheney's comments about Donald Trump are very precise, including language from the criminal obstruction statute, and she stated that her question is a key one for the panel's legislative task. Democrat Senator Jamie Raskin, too, has told the website Politico that the issue of whether Donald Trump broke the law by obstructing an official proceeding is clearly one of the things on the mind of some of the members of the House committee. Paul Rosenzweig, a former Department of Justice prosecutor who worked on Ken Starr's team during the impeachment of former President Bill Clinton, said, "The possibility of obstruction charges is legally valid," noting that the two district judges appointed by Donald Trump have recently said that the statute covers the efforts on 6th of January to stop the electoral count. For instance, Judge Daphne Friedrich, in a recent opinion, rejected the claim for some defendants who were challenging the Department of Justice's view that the 6th of January meeting of Congress fit the legal definition of an official proceeding. Rosenzweig posited that given Donald Trump's various attempts before 6th of January to undermine the election results, a broader conspiracy case may be another option for prosecutors to pursue. Former prosecutors say, should Department of Justice look at broader conspiracy charges, Donald Trump's persistent pressures on acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen and his top deputy for help blocking Joe Biden's election victory would probably be relevant. On one call on 27th of December 2020, Donald Trump pressed Jeffrey Rosen and his deputy to falsely state the election illegal and corrupt, despite the fact that the Department of Justice has not found any evidence of widespread voter fraud. Paul Peltier, a former acting chief of fraud section at Department of Justice, said that Liz Cheney's statements were carefully crafted and obviously based upon evidence the committee had seen. Should Congress ultimately refer the case to Department of Justice for investigation and prosecution, the Department of Justice's investigation would not be limited to a single obstruction charge, but would more likely investigate broader conspiracy charges, potentially involving Donald Trump and other key loyalists. The panel has accelerated its pace recently by sending out dozens of subpoenas for documents and depositions, some to close Donald Trump aides. Mark Meadows has become a central focus of the inquiry, in part over tweets he received on and near the insurrection that are among approximately 9,000 documents he gave the panel, much to Donald Trump's chagrin. As Trump's efforts to thwart the panel from moving forward have had limited success, he has relied on sending out splenetic email attacks, including one recently that read, "The Unselect Committee itself is rigged, stacked with never-Trumpers, Republican enemies, and two disgraced rhinos, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who couldn't get elected dogcatcher in their districts." Despite Donald Trump's angry attacks on the panel, some former prosecutors say that prosecuting Trump, if enough evidence is found to merit charges, is important for the health of American democracy. Former Georgia Attorney General Jay Moore told The Guardian, "I hate to think of a legal system that would allow the most powerful person in the country to go unchallenged when he has abdicated his highest priority, that being to keep American citizens safe. Donald Trump's conduct on that day was not unlike a mob boss."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.